Blue 80, shut up! And I snap the ball, and there's just this horrific splash.
It's time to join the stink tank.
You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I completely emptied my bladder on the bench.
I like to call myself a Jason Bourne of pooping.
Mark Schlereth.
This stinks!
Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob.
One of the biggest reasons Tuesdays are just gold here with Wyman and Bob. We got Mike Lefko in for Dave Wyman today. And joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, a man you love, you know, you can't wait to hear from. Mark Schlereth is here. How are you, man?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm doing awesome. So Dave is, I saw your tweet. He's taking a veteran day today, yeah. Huh?
He's getting a little cleanup on a knee. I think he's trying to catch up to you as a number of surgeries.
Yeah, well, he's got a lot of credits to get there, so he's got plenty of time. I mean, besides being fat, what has Dave done to make his knee go bad?
He's fallen off.
Too much weight? Is it just too much body weight on the knee?
He did have his treadmill fire him into the wall of his basement or something. that was a while ago. I don't know if this is a result of that, but that was a good story.
Well, and this is supposedly his good knee.
Yeah, that was the other part. This is his good knee. So yeah.
All right. We'll just keep it. We'll just figure it out. We'll eventually figure it out. Maybe we'll get down to the bottom of this thing.
Yeah. Hey, so you were on the call for what turned out to be just a pig of a game for the Seahawks. What was your takeaway? We got excited about how they looked in the first half against the Broncos. Since then, the offense has not scored a point in the following six quarters. This kind of looks like a team we thought, a lot of youth, a lot of inexperience, what's your takeaway from what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, obviously did not, it just did not, nothing was consistent, and I think one of the things about Geno in this offense, it's really ultimately it's about running the football effectively and really getting the ball out of Geno's hands. A lot of short steps, a lot of short drops, stuff off the play action, all that kind of stuff. You certainly don't want to get in, and not a lot of people do want to get in second and long, third down and long situations. But, I think that's going to be somewhere where they struggle a little bit. The other thing is, DK Metcalf just wasn't right. He had a back or a hand or something during the course of the game that was really bothering him. So, your most dynamic weapon on the outside is hindered to some degree. And, you got to give credit to San Francisco. I mean, I will tell you this. The injury to Trey Lance is terrible as that is, and as hard as it is to look at, and as disappointed as you are for the kid, it just took the San Francisco 49ers from maybe playoff contenders, maybe sneak in as a wild card, to one of the favorites in the NFC, because that team, top to bottom, is a loaded football team. They are deep and they are tough on defense at all three levels. And offensively, they're a really good football team. Even with a bunch of no-name backs, you know they're going to be able to run the ball. So I think Jimmy Garoppolo ultimately makes them one of the favorites, not only to win that division, but one of the favorites in the NFC. So it was kind of one of those fortuitous injuries, if you will, because it gets Jimmy back on the field. And I think they're a better football team with Jimmy right now. Maybe not for the long term, maybe not for the long term future, but certainly they are with him in the present.
Yeah, isn't that kind of strange, Mark? I mean, I know the Niners invested so much draft capital in going up and getting Trey Lance, and now it almost seemed like, not there was going to be a little revolt there, but the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo was still hanging around, he works out, he's in there. Does it kind of save a little bit of Kyle Shanahan's skin that it kind of worked out like this?
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, it's just smart to make sure you've got somebody in that backup position that can play and they can bail you out. But it's not just a bailout. It's not just, hey, can you get us two or three games? And then, and if we play really well all the way around, then we've got a chance. I mean, here's the thing about young quarterbacks or backup quarterbacks, like legitimate franchise guys, cover warts. That's what they do. They're wart coverers, and then career backups are young guys that you're developing. Those guys expose warts. And so to win football games with that kind of situation, everything's got to be just about perfect, right? I mean, you got to win in special teams. You got to create turnovers, very much like what the Seattle Seahawks did in the first game against the Denver Broncos. You got to create those turnovers. You got two goal line stands. where you turn the ball over on the 1 yard line twice. I mean, it hasn't happened since, I think, on the 1 yard line. It hadn't happened since 1987. It was a replacement team from the scab strike. So, I mean, like, all these things have to happen that are almost perfect. And let me just tell you, having played for a long time, no perfect games have ever been played. And so it's really hard to win when you're constructed that way. And, you know, it's virtually impossible. And, you know, they got themselves behind, and it's just hard to, you know, it's hard to play that way when you're not the most dynamic football team, and, you know, and you got to go out and win that way. Makes it really tough.
You know, one of the silver linings I'm looking for in this team this year, Mark, and Dave and I talked about it yesterday, was that you go into a season, and if you're being realistic, you'd sort of take the fandom out of it and you look at the team, you're going, all right, the postseason isn't in the cards. This is a year of development. This is a transition year. These guys, you know, Tariq Woolen, Kobe Bryant, Charles Cross, Lucas, all these rookies are going to get so much valuable time, so many valuable reps under their belt in real game action that they might not otherwise get if this is a team that is poised to get to the playoffs. They've got all these entrenched starters that we're going to see the dividends, not this year, could be rough, but next year and the following year about developing the core. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, certainly I buy into that, but you got to have some success too, right? I mean, you've got to, and I do believe this from Pete Carroll and the way that football team is constructed. I do believe there's a great culture there, a competitive culture there, a really good culture there. So, you know, it's easy for your culture to disintegrate when you're not winning games. And then even though you've got a bunch of young guys playing, what ends up happening is young guys develop bad habits. See, here's what I know. Like, here's what I know about culture. Culture is like irrigation. It follows the path of least resistance, right? It's like water. It just is going to follow the path of least resistance. So if you start to lose a bunch and you don't have that really solid culture that's being developed and worked on and being lived every single day, well, guys just gravitate to what's easy. And when you become a team that gravitates to what's easy, then you become a bunch of independent contractors. And when you're a bunch of independent contractors, you're not sold out for everybody else's well-being. You're just making sure that you get yours. And when that becomes your team chemistry, or that becomes your team culture, you will suck. And you will suck for a long time. And it's really hard to get out of that. So, I mean, there's a bunch of, and that's why every coach comes in, you know, Detroit Lions, come on. Like, every coach comes in and preaches, we got to change the culture. Now, Dan Campbell may be the guy to do that. But all bad teams, what are the first thing they do? All the coaches say, hey, man, we got to change the culture of this organization. It's hard to do that. So there's a reason where, like, the also-rans of the NFL remain also-rans for decades. It's because that's a really hard thing to get done.
Hey, Mark, so in looking at some of those rookies who played, and I'll defer to you, offensive lineman, your expertise on the line. The two rookie tackles, we have given them so much attention because of how important they are to building up this offense again. What did you see out of those guys, and maybe most notably Charles Cross, in holding up and how they'll have to adapt to facing very good defensive end rushers?
Yeah, listen, they're good players, really good players. I think, I think Abraham Lucas is a powerful dude. Put some guys on the ground and got a holding call that I thought was BS, but, you know, that's part of the deal. But, you know, he's a finished guy. You know, I thought he's a good player. And then I think Charles Cross, also a good player. I thought maybe late in the game against Denver, where he gave up a couple of pressures, some of that was on the quarterback, not stepping up in the pocket and helping him avoid those things. And, you know, some of that was lazy technique. Lazy is probably not the right word. I think it's almost tired technique, right? Like, this game is really hard at the professional level, and the guys across from you, there are no blind sisters of the poor. You know, when they rotate another guy in, that guy is in the NFL for a reason. So you never get a break. And when your technique breaks down and your technique gets tired or lazy, you're going to give up sack. You're going to give up pressures. So I thought that was kind of a learning experience for Charles Cross. But I mean, it's not going to get any easier. It certainly wasn't easy with the guys, you know, whether as Ebukam, Samson Ebukam, or, you know, Nick Bosa. And by the way, Nick Bosa looks like a freaking superhero, dude.
Yeah, he does.
Like, I was wompy jawed. I was standing in the end zone watching him warm up, and like completely, like, I thought maybe for sure he was like, like going to call security on me because I like couldn't take my eyes off.
You're making him uncomfortable.
Right. Six, like just yoked up. I've never seen quads. Like his quads are ridiculous. His legs are unbelievable. And I'm going to get arrested for Googling. He put him right in the Captain America outfit. Yeah. It was like Captain America before he got in that machine that juiced him all up and got him big. Like, he's the after picture. And he's a damn good football player. So, you know, you're getting tested. There's no question about that.
Hey, what is your take on Geno? You look at his numbers, you go, man, he's really efficient, completing, 80% of his passes. But I've talked about him and people think I'm ripping on him. I think Geno's just that guy. Though I don't think he's the guy to bring you back from that deficit that they found themselves in. He's not the guy that's electric. He's the guy that's going to take what the defense gives him, and he's going to sort of dink and dunk you to death. I think he's just a solid quarterback. He's your for now guy. He's not the guy that, hey, he's this gem that nobody gave a chance to, and now he's going to show you that he's an elite level quarterback. I don't see that. Am I being unfair to him?
No, I don't think you're being unfair. I think he's the ultimate systems guy. And now I will say this: just watching him throw the ball in warmups, Geno Smith can spin it now. I mean, he can spin it. Like, he has got. I did not realize how much arm talent he has, because Drew Locke is a young gunslinger with a lot of arm talent, and Geno Smith's got better arm talent than Drew Locke. I mean, his arm talent is legit. But he's that guy. He's a systems guy. He's going to put the ball where the ball's supposed to go, depending upon what the call is, and that's who Geno Smith is, and he's really good at that. I think the issue that you get into is that 30%, I always call it the 70-30 rule. At least that's kind of how I explain it, or how I think about football, is, 70% of the time we want to be on schedule. We just, as an offense, you want to be, hey, you want to run your first down play, and you want to be in second down and, in five, second down and five and a half. And then now your whole playbook is open. What's your second down play? Do we play a play action? Do we run again and get ourselves in third and two? And then when I get into a third and two situation, I want to convert, right? What are my conversion plays? Like, how am I going to third down and one? How am I going to convert? I'm going to quarterback sneak. I'm going to move the chains. And I'm going to go and I'm going to wear the defense out. And as long as you're on schedule, I think Geno Smith is very good. Off schedule is, 30% of the time. And the off-schedule stuff is really important, right? That's where if you can't design a big play, that's where some of your big explosive plays happen. Now, I will tell you this. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know who does the math on this stuff, but I didn't research it. Somebody did the math and told me. And so I just took it for – it's like how I get my news. I just get it off social media. So I just assume that it's true, right? It's like Wikipedia. I assume that everything on there is true. If it's not, then that's, I'll just throw an ish on the end. But every explosive play, so 10-plus yard runs, right, and 20-plus yard passes are the equivalent. When you get one of those, that equals about 2.4 points per explosive. So it's essentially impossible to score, to put a scoring drive together without an explosive or two in it. Okay, it just is. So can you design an explosive? Well, you can't really design an explosive play in the passing game unless you're really running it efficiently, right? Because then we put guys in conflict. We put a linebacker in conflict. He jumps up on a fake handoff, on a play action, and all of a sudden you get somebody behind him on a crossing route. Bam, we hit a, deep cross, and next thing you know, it's a 24-yard gain, right? Like, you've got to get some of those explosives for you to be able to, be an efficient offense and score. So if you're a systems guy, you better design it really well and execute really well to get those. If not, you got to make them off schedule. And I just don't see Geno as a real off schedule big play guy, although he avoided the sack in that Denver game, when Alex Singleton ran over the top of Travis Homer, and he still got to the, got the line of scrimmage, and there was a drop in coverage and hit Disley down the sideline, and boom, the rest is history. He scores, right? But like those off-schedule things, here's what I think. 30%, you're good with 30% off-schedule. If your quarterback can make off-schedule plays, it's okay. It's an okay way to live. It's when you start becoming Kyler Murray and spend 50% of your time off-schedule. You'll win some games, but you'll lose more than you win. that's just the nature of kind of off schedule plays to me. So I just don't think in that system, I don't think that they are legit good enough to live in that system without, you know, with just being a system quarterback and, you know, dinking and dunking down the field and being able to create explosives, if that makes sense.
So how do you get some of that pressure off Geno Smith? I mean, Pete Carroll has stressed establishing the run, getting back to that identity, and then they only had 12 handoffs. Now, Geno had 2 carries, but if you look at running backs, only had 12 rushes, and I know that was a big deficit early on. Is it patience? Do you have to fully commit to that? Or how do the Seahawks get back to establishing the run in a game where the Niners did that and the Seahawks weren't able to?
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, it wasn't a big deficit. It was a 6-point deficit, you know, in that. I don't remember what the halftime score was now off the top of my head. But, you know, the first two drives, you ended up shutting down the Niners and it made them kick field goals, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, that's okay. Like, I think oftentimes you get into, from a play caller standpoint, and this comes down to Shane Waldron, from a play caller standpoint, you've got to understand it. And a lot of teams I consult for, talk to, you know, the teams that reach out to me, it's truly about changing your mindset. Like, you have to be able, especially when you're an offense that's constructed the way you guys are constructed right now, young rookie tackles, you know, a running back that, you know, one rookie running back and one running back that, let's face it, has spent more time injured than he has on the field. You've got to change the mindset to where you understand the value of a 2 or 3 yard run. That doesn't deter you from continuing to run the football and set up your play action off of that stuff. You don't have to be incredibly efficient running the football to really be good in run action. And I categorize it run action and play action. Play action is more drop back off a handoff. Run action is where, you know, you show that the wide handoff and you boot keep out the backside or you waggle out the backside. That's run action stuff. You don't have to be incredibly efficient running the football to create some big plays in the passing game. But what ends up happening to coordinators is you're just like, well, we're only getting 2-3 yards a carry, not good enough, and they get bored with it. And here's what I always tell coordinators, because this drives me crazy. I had a meeting with a head coach, and we were talking about running the ball, and I said to this head coach, I go, here's what I hate about you. And he's like, oh, great. I can't wait for this, right? And I go, this is what I hate about you. You'll hand it off 3 times and get 2 yards of carry, and you'll throw your hands up in the air, and you go, screw it, we can't run the ball. But I go, you'll throw 7 incompletions in a row and not even think twice about it. I go, what the hell's wrong with you? And why do you not understand the value of that? And so, you know, I look at our own situation here in Denver, where, again, with Seattle, you threw it 42 times in that first game in that crowd noise. Like, you threw it 42 times. Russell Wilson dropped back 42 times. You averaged 5.5 yards a carry. And one of your backs got it, I think, 11 times, and the other one got it 7 times, something like that. Like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, that's just stupid to me. Again, that comes down to philosophy. And if you preach that philosophy to your quarterback, to your receivers, to just to your football team, right, and they start to embrace it, well, you know, then all of a sudden they get excited about a 3-yard run because they know they're wearing people out. They're beating people up. And I will tell you this, you better do it against San Francisco because – they are too deep and too talented in their front 7 to sit back and pass. Like, you're going to get, like, a lot of teams will get crushed with that philosophical approach.
I love that you start out a conversation with, let me tell you what I hate about you. That's perfect. Let's just set the table right
you
there.
Know, yeah. No sugarcoat it. Just let them know what you think.
Hey, by the way, before I ask you a follow-up here, the 360 texting in, ask Stink where I can buy his chili. I'm an Alaska commercial fisherman.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, stinkinggood.com is probably the only place you can, you got to order it. So I apologize for that. But yeah, stinkinggood.com.
Is it stinking IN or is there a G on there?
Yeah, That one G, so stinking good. Like so
okay, I got you.
Not two G.
Stinkinggood.com. There you go. There you go. Hey, so what is the feeling about Russell out there? People obviously still curious. You look at the numbers. I didn't see much of that game against Houston, but not that impressive to beat the Texans at home by a touchdown. And Russell's numbers didn't look great. It sounds like it was poorly received, to say the least, out there.
Yeah, not real happy. I don't think it's so much about Russell here right now. It's Nathaniel Hackett taking the heat, and you know, rightfully so. I mean, your plan. You know, we got a good plan. Your plan can't be to kick a 64-yard field goal in Lumen Field, you know, and then come back. They had a situation where they kicked the 54-yarder that was true in the game against Houston. It was just money down the middle, and they got to delay a game. So then they moved it back to the, you know, to kick a 59-yarder, and they decided to punt. I go, wait a minute, you're in altitude, and a 59-yarder is no good, but in Lumen Field, that's never hit more than what, a 56-yarder, the 64-yarder is your plan. Like he's taking heat right now, and I love Nathaniel Hackett, but I'm not afraid to give him a little heat either. So he's a good dude. I think so. Most of the heat, like Russell had legit. There had to be like six drops, like receivers. I mean, the receivers were like that. Hands made of feet in that game for whatever reason. So there was like a bunch of legit drops and a bunch of completions that came back because delay game, offsides, you know, like they had another 13 penalties. So they had 12 against Seattle. And they had 13 against Houston.
Jeez.
The 25 penalties in two games is the most in the history of the franchise. And this franchise started in 1960. Like, if there was only a way you could have practiced that before the season started. It's like, if there's only a way you could have got your starters out there and actually practiced it. But, like, I mean, obviously you can, because you refuse to put any starters in a preseason game, for crying out loud.
Man. So quickly, before I let you go, do you feel like Hackett is going to be a good coach, or are you having your doubts about how good he is? Cause I've read the same things you're talking about. A lot of the fingers being pointed at him.
Yeah, no. I think Hackett's a really smart football guy. I think it's like anything else, you know, you get into a situation and you probably didn't give it the credit it deserves. Like their operation of not being able to get plays in and like that's miserable. And, you know, that goes right to the head coach. And yeah, I think you thought it was going to be easy, right? I mean, there was an interview, we all play it now because you know how the radio game works, where he's like, hey, this ain't my first rodeo. I've called plenty of games before. You know, I've been like, there was this, hey, this is not going to be a problem that we didn't take any preseason reps. And then, You lead the league in delay of game penalties and offside penalties because you're racing up the line of scrimmage trying to snap the ball because you didn't get the play in on time. So, yeah, they're taking a lot of heat right now, and deservedly so. You should take a lot of heat because you got to be better than that. And now, you know, the Niners come into town, and I thought initially if Trey Lance was going to play and that you had a really good chance to win this game, I think your chances just diminished quite a bit. With Jimmy Garoppolo at the helm. So we'll see. They're a good football team, the Niners are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we certainly saw that, and you saw it up close and personal. Mark, always good to talk to you, man. We appreciate it. Again, the website is Stinkin' Good.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yep.
Stinkinggood.com.
Yep.
That's where you get the chili. All right, Mark, great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Take care.
There you go. Mark Schlereth with us every single week. You're on his website right now.
Oh, of course.
Looking at
if
the
it's
chili.
Food related, I'm there.
Yeah, you're so there.
It's good. Handful of flavors there.
Really?
You have stinking good pork green chili. Then you have the medium spice one. You have the extra spicy and medium spicy pork green chili, chicken green chili, and queso.
All right. There you go. How about full service? There you go. All right. Coming up, by the way, if you missed any of that conversation with Mark, it'll be available for you on the podcast page after the show. SeattleSports.com. Head to the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. All right. Coming up, Ryan Neal is always one of the best guys to talk to on the Seahawks team. He's got a great personality. We talked to him yesterday. A lot of people didn't get a chance to hear it, so we'll give you that conversation. Coming up next, it's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome in, everybody. It is time for our player spotlight here with Wyman and Bob at Seattle Sports Station on 710. And always fun to talk to this guy. Great conversations we've had with him in the past, and we look forward to this one. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Ryan Neal of your Seattle Seahawks is with us. How are you, man?
Man, I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. We appreciate you joining us. I would imagine it's tough after a game like that. There's not a lot to celebrate. But how do you handle a game like that? Are you a guy that will kind of just say, let me look at the film, let me get the iPad on the plane, let me see what happened there, or do you talk about it with the guys in the locker room? How do you handle that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's just something. Of course, you don't like to deal with it, but it's something that's a great opportunity to learn. And in this case, it was a great learning opportunity for us. You know what I mean? And one of the things about this is, you know, you got to look at the good and the hindsight, man. You come on the film and you see that more times than not, it wasn't anything that they did. It was the things that, you know, we did as a team, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot and other stuff like that. So it's a great learning opportunity for a young team to get early on in the season. And in hindsight, you'll be thankful for games like this because it'll help shape and mold, you know, what we're trying to build here. You know what I mean? So that's all you got to take it as.
So, Ryan, take us through it. I used to record the game on a VHS tape and then get home and watch it on my VCR. Ooh. It's because I wanted to see it, you know, before Ooh. Film. I know it's painful, man. What do you guys have? I mean, are you, you've got it, like Bob said, an iPad, right? And are you downloading the game? Is everybody pretty much looking at the game on the way home? Take us through that.
Oh, absolutely, man. Shoot, I'm talking about as soon as we get on the bus and get done eating, guys got the games on the iPads. We're looking at it together before we even get, you know, to the day today. So, I mean, everybody's already took a pre-look at it and, you know, taking an honest evaluation of what went down. So we all on the same page. So, I mean, yeah, it's quick. You know, not no VHS process. I mean, last time I seen a VHS tape must have been Three Ninjas or something like that. But, I mean, shoot, we get it right then and now. So,
Dave, I don't know if you...
I'll show you some of my tapes someday, Ryan.
Oh, I'll have to see that for sure.
Dave, I don't know if you could hear him when you said VHS. He's going, ooh.
Ooh. Yeah, he was groaning. It was painful.
For you didn't get a ton of opportunity in this game, and I guess that leads to the first obvious question: just physically, where are you at? Are you? Do you feel like, okay, I'm ready to go physically? I can go out there and play four quarters, or are you kind of, you know, slow stepping it back into it?
Hello, Ryan, they're ready to go. I mean, I'm full throttle and ready. It's just, you know, all about when the opportunity comes. And, you know, you get few and far in between. And some games you don't get them. But it's a thing that, you know, is going to come out. And when it comes out, I'm going to do what I do. And I can't wait and I'm excited. So, I mean, you know, you'll see more of it. And like I always say, when my number's called, I'll be ready to rock and roll. And right now, I'm 1,000% ready. So I'm just waiting on the opportunity, man. I'm waiting on the opportunity. When it comes, it comes. So it'll be there for sure.
Ryan, saw you got on the field quite a bit for special teams. What are the special teams that you're on?
Oh, every last one of Everything. Them, and in two positions on almost every one. Yeah. So I'm on there double time. Yeah.
Tell us about the block kick, man. That was awesome to see, and it looked like there was one earlier that somebody almost got to that came off the left side. I'm not sure who that was, but tell us about those plays.
I mean, I tell you what, Tariq Woolen is an absolute freak. It's almost like watching a Rottweiler puppy run around for the first time with them big old feet, and they just running into stuff. Like, he just doesn't even know. It's like he just don't even know what he has and what the ability he's gotten. Seeing him block that field goal, I mean, the crazy thing is, even last week, we seen him, and in the preseason, he's been getting so doggone close, and it was just only a matter of time, and he got one. And seeing the ball find Mike Jack is just another beautiful thing, too. I mean, I guess him and the ball have a very great relationship right now, because I'm telling you, it just make you feel good. He just keeps on doing it, man. He went and took it to the crib for us. So it was super exciting, man. You love it when special teams can make plays, and even though we had a little mishap on a punt return, we got one right back in a big way. So, you know, that's always something you're grateful for to happen in a football game.
Hey, Ryan, one of the things we were talking about all week was just there was so much intensity going into game one against the Broncos. It's the season opener at home, Monday Night Football. Russell's coming back to town. It's hard to hard to duplicate that kind of anticipation and intensity. Did you feel it going into this game? Was it dramatically different for you guys, or how did it feel going into this one compared to week one?
I always feel like, especially guys that have been around, we understand what it is when it comes to the 49ers. Like, that's a rival for us. You know what I mean? We take those games very seriously, and they have big history behind them, you know what I mean, for years and years and years. So we understood what it was going in. We knew what was going on. We was going in, and, you know, unfortunately, we got humbled a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And as a young team, just like I said, it's going to be a great lesson for us to learn how to turn pages between games and understanding that every game is a championship game, you know what I mean, not just one. So it'll be a great learning opportunity for us, for sure.
Hey, Ryan, is there something different or particular about their run game? I was kind of talking to these guys through it, that it looks like a lot of times, like, if they run a toss, the linemen don't necessarily give it away early on, and it just seems like a very, you know, look, it's still football, right? But it just, you know, it just seems like it's a little bit different than other schemes. Do you see anything different?
Well, I'll tell you what, Shanahan's really good for just is his play designs and play structures, and that's one thing he's really good at. Some teams, when they do tosses, it's not necessarily a toss. It's more of an inside zone flavor to get guys overflowing, and some tosses are true tosses, so it could be different kinds. And what he is really good at is having those great players in those positions to kind of do it all in different personnel groups and stuff like that. And that's what makes them a special run game team. So, you know, shout out to Shanahan, but, you know, we got to just play it better, and we understand what it was. We were prepared for it, and we knew it, so we just got to play better to it.
Hey, as far as this defense goes, you know, obviously there's a new coordinator there with Clint Hurt, and we talked all offseason about, oh, it's a 4-3 with 3-4 principles and all that. You know, what does that mean, and are we going to be able to really tell visually? For you being in it, is it just in terms of scheme and what you're asked to do, is it dramatically different from last year? Is it very similar? How different is this defense?
Well, it's a little bit different than last year. You know what I mean? Last year, we started moving in that direction, actually, toward the halfway point of the season. But before that, we was true like DN team. But now we're playing with a more of an outside linebacker flavor. And so it's a little bit different, but not too much. And, like, we got the athletes to do it. You know what I mean? We got the guys to do it, and it fits them perfectly. So, you know, we just – it's all about execution. So I think it's nothing different. I mean, it's new, but it's we got the guys to fit it for sure.
Hey, what does Ryan Neal do on the road? I know you didn't have a lot of time down in San Francisco, but, like, we're going to Detroit and New Orleans. Do you get out with your friends? Do you go out on the Saturday and try to see the town a little bit, or you sit in your room? What do you do on the road?
Oh, man, Ryan liked to eat, and especially in different places, especially New Orleans. I got to go out and get some food. You have to go eat. But, yeah, that's the first thing I'm doing everywhere we go. I got to find great food wherever we are because, you know, different places always have different great things about them. So that's the first thing I do on road games.
Is there a favorite dish or a favorite, like, when I go to this city, I got to go and eat this specific thing? Is there one thing you look forward to each season?
Oh, definitely. If I'm ever on the East Coast or down south, I'm looking for oxtails immediately. I don't know why, but I have to have them because that's, like, one of my favorite things to eat. So as soon as I get outside of the Pacific Northwest, that's the first thing I'm looking for, some oxtails.
Excuse me. You said oxtails?
Yes, sir.
What is an oxtail?
Oh, man. Well, you ain't never had a Jamaican oxtail plate with, like, rice and plantain? Oh, don't get me started because I'm a wanted for real. I'm a wanted for real.
I'm going to have to look that one up, man.
They don't have that in Seattle anywhere?
Oh, not that I know of.
Well, we'll put out an APB to our listeners. They can text in any places that may serve that.
Please, please, please. I need it. I need it. I need it.
All right. We got lots of resources. Our texters will tell us, and Ryan, I will come find you, and I'll tell you where you can get oxtails here.
Yes. Right. Somebody find it for me, please. I'm desperate.
Well, what would be next on the list? Is there something a little bit more common you could find here in Seattle? Are you a seafood guy, or you like steaks? Where else do you go?
Oh, I love seafood, especially in New Orleans. You got to get seafood boils down there. They got great Cajun food all over the place down there, so that's why I love going to get down there. But other than that, man, that's really it. Oxtail, seafood for sure, a seafood broil, that's like my favorite things. I just kind of can't find around here, so that's what I go look for.
Well, Ryan, how are you feeling physically and working into this, you know, getting back into this defense? You think we're going to start to see, I think you had four or five snaps yesterday. You kind of ramped up to get back in there and start getting getting some playing time?
Oh, yeah. Ryan is ready, 100% ready to go. Nothing holding me back. I'm full throttle. So, you know, like I said, it's all about when my name is called and I'll be ready to come through. You know what I mean? So I'm ready to rock and roll whenever the time presents itself.
Ryan, we always appreciate you taking the time, man. You're always a fun conversation, and we appreciate it. Obviously, we wish you nothing but the best, and hopefully things get turned around next weekend against the Atlanta Falcons. Nothing but the best. Thanks so much, man.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys, man. Thank you for having me.
There you go. There's Ryan Neal of your Seattle Seahawks Oxtail.
Mm. He got me interested when he said that.
You check it out. Let me know how that goes. I'll let you dive in head first on that one. Reminder, this hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by my future bestest pals in the whole wide world, Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. I'm certain they have a picture of me hanging up in there somewhere. We're just that close.
Yeah.
That's how that one's going.
He said, do not give a car to this guy.
That's right. Keep him out of here. That's why the picture is up. You see him, call the security. Our Seahawks player spotlight is presented by Mazda of Everett. Coming up, we heard from Stank, and we're going to dive deeper into the drama unfolding in Denver. That is coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. Mike Lefko in for Dave. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Our thanks to Ryan Neal for joining us on the program. We had that conversation with him yesterday, and boy, the texts are just flying in as to where you can get oxtail.
Seems to be popular here. Our show has been hijacked by oxtail recommendations.
I had never even heard of it as a item.
I have to try it now, obviously.
Well, help yourself. Let me know. And somebody else sent in a text. I bet Bob is loving this, and then in quotes, Ryan Neal stuff, where he's going third person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
Hey, Ryan Neal was hungry, so Ryan Neal's
Ryan Neal's always ready. He's making Bob uncomfortable is what he's doing. But yeah, a lot of people recommending different places to get oxtail. I used to be a much more adventurous eater. Now I think I just know what I like, and I don't really need to. I'll try anything once kind of thing is what I would usually do.
There are
a
lot of things you don't like, I've heard.
Well, but I've tried, though.
Okay.
I've tried them. Mm-hmm. I won't just out of hand say, ugh, not, except for those... No, yeah, I actually tried those too. The crickets or grasshopper, whatever. Yeah. I tried one of those. I don't need to eat them again.
You're like the Padres broadcasters. They made a big deal about that when they were here.
Yeah, it's just like, all right, I tried it. It's novel, but it's not something I'm like craving. I got to get those when I go to the ballpark. But yeah, you were reading the description of it. It didn't sound appealing, but everybody texting in is like, oh my God, it's so good. Tell them to go here. Tell them to go there. It's delicious. So
we have gotten at least 4 to 5 different places.
Yeah.
All to pass on to Ryan Neal. So we'll compile the list and send it to him.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll try to get that forwarded to him. Meanwhile,
he could be listening, right? I'm sure he's listening.
Is he?
Yeah, sure.
As they are wont to do.
Yes.
Over there. This hour of Wyman and Bob brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. So we talked to Stink there about what's going on with Denver, and I know there we saw a bunch of texts where most people want to point the finger at Russell. It's all his fault. Any delay, anything that goes wrong on offense is basically his fault. Seemed pretty clear in Stink's estimation. This is the coaching staff. This is their communication issues. Nathaniel Hackett, on his own, has said, "Yeah, I've got to make decisions quicker. I've not been making them as quickly as I need to in order to get them out there and get the play and everybody lined up, all that good stuff." And then, interestingly, on the broadcast, you heard the CBS crew questioning his decision making as well.
I mean, you got Javonte Williams, who's running for 6.7 yards per carry. And you hand it off to a guy for just the second time in his career, and now he's going to attempt a field goal with McManus. And the play clock is winding down quickly because there was some indecision again. Play clock at 1. A whistle. And what happened first? Delay a game or timeout?
Delay of game.
Wow.
Offense.
So this is on the kick.
And that is a national broadcast.
Yeah.
It is a nonpartisan, objective broadcast. And he did the same thing again. And they were calling him out like that.
And again, that's special teams out there. That's not, I know you want it to be all Russell. I get it with some of you. You want it to be, well, this is who he is, old Russell Wilson in the clock. This is Hackett, and it's clearly Hackett.
Oh, no, it's disarray out there completely,
yeah,
I think.
I mean, this is with the field goal team on the field. And you know, the decisions aren't very consistent. Again, as Stink pointed out, they're going for a 64-yard field goal here at Lumen Field. They've got altitude in Denver and decide not to go for it on, what was it, a 59-yarder it turned into after the penalty?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was 54 before the penalty.
Right, that's funny. They wouldn't go for 59.
Yeah, so then it gets moved back 5 yards. Now it's a 59-yard attempt. They're in altitude, but we'll go 5 yards further back in Seattle without the altitude. So his decision-making is lacking consistency, but what seems to be consistent is just sort of the disarray out there, and that's why I was asking Stink, do you think he's a good coach? Do you think he's... You know, is he the guy for the job? And for his own part, like I said, he's owning it, which I guess that's what you got to do. He just said, we got to make sure the communication is clear and concise. I need to be better at making decisions faster and quicker and getting that information out to the quarterback. It's got to improve. Yeah, he's right. They looked at the fact they've had 25 penalties in 2 games. My God.
Do you think Mark Rogers is compiling a new list?
Of teams to go to.
But seriously, I mean, how much of a grace period is there? This is probably not.
For Hackett?
Yeah, because this is probably not the same situation as a normal first-time head coach. You brought in a guy to win you a Super Bowl. The Broncos gave away all their capital. They brought in Russell Wilson to compete now. They signed him to a long-term contract. Russell Wilson aired out his frustrations here. So now you have this. You have this malarkey there, and you have the Broncos slipping further and further. Is the grace period a little shorter? Is his rope a little bit shorter than it would
I don't
be?
Know that it is, only because just in reading all the preseason projections about teams, and this team's supposed to be this, and there tends to be I won't say a consensus, but there's a strong feeling that is shared by many when it comes to those things. Like, I was just texting with somebody, you know, one of our listeners who was, you know, annoyed that I was saying the Seahawks aren't going to be a playoff team, and, you know, that's being realistic and they don't believe that. That's fine. That's everybody has their opinion, but I'm in the majority, the large majority on that. And there's a large majority that looked at the Broncos, and I'll defer to them because I don't watch Broncos games. They didn't look impressive here. They certainly didn't look impressive in the Texans game by judging of what everybody has said. And I didn't hear anybody talking about this as a playoff team. They were a 7-win team last year. I don't know if Russell alone turns around their fortunes or what they've done to their roster versus last year, but I didn't read anything that said this is a team that's poised and ready to make a run.
Well, don't tell Broncos fans that, because they were booing them at halftime. We haven't even gotten into that yet, but they were booing their own team.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if Seattle fans were classless for booing Russell Wilson, what are Denver fans for booing their own new quarterback one half in?
Yeah, well, are they booing him? They booing the whole the coach? You know, I mean, it's hard to decipher who that's aimed at in particular. But yeah, I don't know. Are they underachieving? Were they supposed to be great? Because I didn't read that. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that.
I think they're supposed to look better than incompetent against the Texans.
Yeah, I don't know. They were the same as Seahawks last year. They were a 7-win team. They did not score many points last year. So I don't know what they're expected to be versus what we've seen to this point. But it's I don't know that they're underachieving, because I didn't read anything that was glowing about the Broncos in terms of them being a postseason contender. Quickly, just a reminder that Seattle Sports has your chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks play host to the Atlanta Falcons on September 25th. For more info and a direct link to enter the sweepstakes, just text the word WIN to the RText line at 866-979-3776. Again, text the word WIN to 866-979-3776 for a link to enter. Coming up, the Mariners are in the middle of their final playoff push. Mike Blowers will join us to break it all down. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. We got Mike Lefko in for Dave today. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.